Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studios, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about, we have some facts about the Green Giant. And then we're going to get into best and worst and most annoying and awesome commercial spokespeople, real or animated. We'll get into some of that. Also, I will give another frustrating quiz to Esmeralda and Dan about their lack of knowledge of Saturday Night Live. So we'll play a little SNL trivia, and I'll just get angrier as they get the questions wrong. So that's all coming up. It's 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Okay. The Golden Globes were presented on Sunday night. We didn't really talk about them on yesterday's show because the entire show was dedicated to the year in movies with Eric and Colin. So I thought we would have our good friend Dan Feinberg join us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, to talk about at least the TV side of the Globes. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Hello, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right. Thanks for taking some time on an off night to be with us.
Oh, for sure. My pleasure.
All right. Outstanding. So before we get to the Golden Globes, I have watched now 3 episodes of Horace and Pete.
And what you think?
Oh, man, it's great. And the third episode, as you probably already know, is the Laurie Metcalf episode. And, you know, you've talked about it. You talked about it as one of the best before. It's kind of astounding.
It really is
an amazing, and it's just the two of them. It's mostly just her. And then Louis C.K. is in there, and then there's a capper at the end when Alan Alda comes in. It's an unbelievable piece, and she's incredible. Who did she lose to?
She lost to Margot Martindale, and I continue to feel bad about this because I don't want to say mean things about Margot Martindale, who is so great, but has now won consecutive Emmys for The Americans, which is itself so great that she didn't deserve. And this one really had to be Laurie Metcalf's, and it wasn't. And I don't know what to say about the Emmy voters on that one. It's just such a clear blunder to me.
The show in general, Horace and Pete, I've only seen 3 episodes of it, but I think it's great. And almost everything that you see, if you agree with me on this, almost everything that Louis C.K. does now is just so melancholy, don't you think? And like, really, there's a profound sadness underneath almost everything.
There is. And I guess we were probably supposed to have seen it the whole time. I think that we were supposed to have seen it in all of his comedy routines over the years. We were supposed to have seen it in Lucky Louie. We were definitely supposed to have seen it in Louie on FX.
Yeah.
But he definitely wants to make sure that that's what's foregrounded, and then that was what he tried to foreground in the last handful of years of Louie, which I continue to believe we're going to get more seasons of just someday, and I don't know when.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one in particular, though, definitely puts the comedy on the back burner at times for the melancholy, and it's very, very effective.
Yeah, very, very effective. And it, to me, you know, it's really interestingly shot. It plays like a play. Like, every episode plays like a play. I mean, in fact, there's an intermission. You know, they actually have an intermission halfway through the episode. Well, not in the Laurie Metcalf episode, but the first two, at least, they did.
It is of a tradition of old television filmed theater. It is very much Louis C.K. channeling Eugene O'Neill or whoever you want to pick on of your famous American playwrights of the 20th century. And it's both derivative in many ways of certain things, but also completely original, and all the more original for the fact that it couldn't be done by anybody else at this moment other than Louis C.K.
Yeah. And I mean, and you know, you talked about in the past, just like within the first 3 episodes, like, I mean, the cast is just ridiculous. The people that are involved, as some of the best work Alan Alda has done ever. Steve Buscemi is great in it. I didn't know that Jessica Lange was in it. And Stephen Wright and Nick DiPaolo, all those guys who are showing up. And you know what? I can't stand Adi Bryant on SNL. I love her on this. it's really a wonderful performance. She's really, really great in it. And, of course, Edie Falco is fantastic in it. And it's grounded in a reality, but also there's these little weird sort of asides, like this sexual fantasy that Louis has, this conversation that he has with Jessica Lange. While Jessica Lange's character is actually sitting in the bar downstairs, he's having this weird conversation. That's like a flight of fancy that you could only get from Louis C.K.
It is so much just being filtered through his brain in the same way that Louis always was. I think that it's so impressive that he's finding these different outlets for these different corners of his brain. And I wish that more artists felt like they could have the freedom to do this, but I don't know that there are that many artists who are as dedicated, productive, and prolific as Louis C.K. is.
Yeah. Well, it's a great show, and you know, I'm glad I'm finally catching up on it. I should be done. Is it 10 episodes, right?
Yep, yeah. 10 episodes, and then probably done, and then we'll just have to wait and cross our fingers and see what next appears magically from the LouisCK.net factory.
And it's, by the way, it's on Hulu. That's how I'm watching it. It's Horace and Pete. It's Louis C.K.'s really special, just really wonderful, wonderful show that I'm glad I'm catching up on, and I would imagine that I'll be done with the series, I don't know, by Thursday. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know that I did finally jump in and watch it, and it's great. And that Laurie Metcalf episode, you were spot on. She's unbelievable.
So, so good.
Yeah, unbelievable. Okay, Golden Globes, what'd you think overall of the broadcast first?
The broadcast was a bit of a mess. I would say it ranged from a bit of a mess to a total mess. The pre-taped intro with Fallon doing several songs, that would be Jimmy Fallon for those who didn't catch the host of the Golden Globes, I guess, doing several songs from La La Land with several various nominees around. It was cute. It wasn't spectacular or innovative or mind-blowing in any way, but it was absolutely cute, and it was the kind of thing that Jimmy Fallon does well. I thought his opening monologue was a disaster.
Yeah.
I thought it was about as bad an award show monologue as I think I've ever seen. It was bad impressions. It was lame punchlines. There was the whole technical thing where I'm still not sure how much he was doing that was actually what he was supposed to be doing. Whatever it was awful. And then the show managed to fall behind almost immediately, and that meant that nearly everything Jimmy Fallon was doing got trimmed out. And, you know, thank heavens for that. But then there were good moments here and there. There were a lot of very good, very earnest, sincere speeches, including, of course, the Meryl Streep speech, which everybody is talking about today. And I'm sure we'll talk about more. And there were sort of fitful bits that worked that were actually scripted. I mean, basically, Steve Carell and Kristen Wiig, that would be maybe at the end of the day what I would put my finger on as the good, funny thing in the show.
It was but for me, it was the highlight of the whole show. You know, I mean, besides a couple of the speeches, like Ryan Gosling's speech and Meryl Streep's speech, it goes without saying. But as far as like scripted stuff and presenters, by far, I mean, it was hilarious. Oh. It was hilarious.
And it was hilarious because of how amazingly committed they both were to playing the drama of the comedic bit. It was such a good dramatic performance from each of them in a situation of pure absurdity that it worked completely and reminded you that you know, Steve Carell's an Oscar-nominated actor, and one of these days Kristen will be as well when she just finds the thing that she needs to do that.
Right. Well, I mean, you were talking about that commitment, man. They held for laughs. I mean, to the point where it was like it was almost uncomfortable, and it was brilliant, and it was really funny. I mean, it was by far the funniest thing of the night, by far.
And it kind of seemed to go on forever, but it also seemed to go on forever in a way where that's what the comedy of the situation required. So thank heavens they actually were willing to go with it. I thought that was a very, very good bit in a show that had almost no good bits. I mean, you look at what the actual bits were for the rest of the show. There was the lame Goldie Hawn doesn't have her glasses, so she can't read things thing. That was bad and a little bit sad. There was the even worse Sofia Vergara mispronounces words thing, which just everybody should be embarrassed by.
It was so bad. So bad.
At some point, I think Jimmy Fallon rapped, and that was horrible.
Yeah, it was Eddie Redmayne and Jessica Chastain in the brain.
Oh, God. So lame and such a warped sense of of racial perspective
right.
to have Jimmy Fallon being the second white rapper in the episode after Millie Bobby Brown in the opening, rapping about an intro to like, what was even the point? Who was gaining anything from that? Just lame. So many things should have been trimmed out. I'm just not in the mood for Jimmy Fallon at this point. I guess he can come back and host again in 10 years or something.
It's funny because I just kept thinking, what's going through Questlove's mind right now? Like what could possibly be going through his mind watching? Well, he gets to watch him do that kind of crap every night. So,
and I've been wondering what's been going through Questlove's mind for months. You know, certainly the Donald Trump hair ruffling, but just I feel like Questlove is a man of substance or some substance who is the band leader for a talk show host of no substance and. It has to be painful for him sometimes,
yeah.
even if the ratings are great, and I'm sure the money is tremendous.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and he's joining us on a special visit to wrap up the Golden Globes. We didn't get a chance to talk about him yesterday because we dedicated the entire show to the movie year of 2016, unveiling our best and worst lists and all that stuff. And by the way, it's podcast right now if you want to hear it. You can go to WGNRadio.com and check out the podcast, Eric, Colin, and our best and worst movies of 2016. There's also a special podcast that you can only hear on podcast. It was not on the air. It did not air. And it's our subcategories where we talk about tons of other things movie-related in 2016. That's all on our website at WGNRadio.com. All right, we got a break here. We got the news. We'll come back more with Dan Feinberg and the Golden Globes on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran with your morning drive at 6. Two for Tuesday, get your requests in. You program the bumps, and we have a theme every day. Today's theme is Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, and get them in there right now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, Twitter at Nick D Show and Facebook, Facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest right now is Dan Feinberg, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. He joins us every other Thursday, but since the Golden Globes were handed out the other night, we wanted to wrap up with Dan on his thoughts on the Golden Globes. Welcome back, Dan.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. So let's go through some of the winners. And I got to say, you know, we get to talk about Atlanta again.
Thank heaven.
Yeah, I was so happy. Atlanta won Best Comedy Series, and Donald Glover won Best Actor in a Comedy Series. Were you surprised, Dan?
I was not hugely surprised because the Golden Globes, as we always say, they like to play kingmakers, and there was a sense, and the sense that we corroborated, and the sense that I agree with, that this was one of the fresh new shows, and that Donald Glover, who people already respected in many different ways, was clearly stepping forward as one of the fresh talents in Hollywood. And so the Globes wanted to help coronate him. And in this particular case, I have absolutely no problems with that as a gesture from the HFPA. I think those were two good wins. In tough categories where there could have been people who could have, like, people on shows that could have won, and it would have been, sure, you know, you're never going to say Jeffrey Tambor is bad or anything. You're never going to say an award for Veep is a disaster, but there definitely were dumb winners they could have had in those categories as well, and they didn't.
Yeah, it was nice to see it get some recognition. I'm just wondering how many people who were watching the Golden Globes have actually ever seen an episode of Atlanta.
I think probably the answer is some. I think that Atlanta is doing reasonably well, and I think that it could always gain more viewers, but I think that it is the kind of show that that a lot of people are discovering now after the series run, the first season run, rather, ended. And I think that you know, my editor, for example, at The Hollywood Reporter, watched it over the holidays and loved it. And I think that most people who discover it will feel similarly. And yeah, I think it's easy to discover. And I hope that the show is building momentum. And whenever it comes back for the second season, it will be relatively huge, maybe.
Yeah. And it's an award winner now. So there you go. Multi-awards. So Donald Glover won for Best Actor in a TV Series, Comedy, or Musical. And Atlanta won Best TV Series, Comedy, or Musical. And if you've not seen Atlanta, it is great. It was my favorite show of 2016. And if you've listened to this show on a regular basis, you know that Dan and I talk about it biweekly. So, all right. Television series drama, it went to The Crown. Were you at all surprised by that?
Not hugely. And I've been saying the whole time since before I gave a very positive review to The Crown when it premiered that, that this was a show that was very much tailored for the Hollywood foreign press. It, it was a show that in all ways speaks to the things that they love and value and happens to do it in a very, very proficient and professional way. And there definitely were shows in this category that it was possible that the HFPA could have favored instead. You know, there was just no way of knowing how much they loved Westworld. They seemed to like it a lot, but did they love it? Not as much as The Crown. So, no, I think this was a not surprising win. But also, I think that of the five shows in that category, The Crown is probably the one that I would have voted for. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, okay. Speaking of Westworld, I just want to mention on a very superficial level, I thought Evan Rachel Wood looked fantastic.
She was very spiffy. She was definitely looking smooth.
Yeah, she looked fantastic, man. Little Marlena Dietrich homage there. I thought she looked great. Okay, so The Crown won, and then for best actor in a television series drama, Billy Bob Thornton for Goliath. That doesn't seem like a surprise. I think didn't you predict that Billy Bob Thornton was going to win it?
It definitely doesn't surprise me. Yeah. Amazon is very good at playing the Globes game, and the Golden Globes are a game. There is no question about that. And if you look at the other performances in the category, you have a bunch of old shows, basically not hugely old. Mr. Robot and Better Call Saul are, you know, they're in their second season, but by Golden Globe standards, that's practically old. So the shiniest, newest show in the category was Goliath, and the movie star deigning to do television was Goliath. And Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah.
So there you are. That's how you win a Globe.
And speaking of Bob Odenkirk, is there some joke that I'm missing between Billy Bob Thornton and Bob Odenkirk?
I just think they're friends.
Oh, okay.
I think that's all it is, and I think there was a little bantery bit, and I think they go back. How far they go back, I can't necessarily say. I can say how far they were joking that they go back, but
right.
Yeah, I think it was just one of those things. I mean, they're both Midwestern guys and stuff, and I assume they've run in somewhat similar circles, and they were just chiding each other, and I think it was friendly.
Yeah, no, I thought it was funny. I just didn't. I thought maybe I was missing something. Like there was some.
No, I don't think there's. I don't think there's a clear thing other than that. Yeah, it was just a piece of chummy jokery.
Okay, you must have been very happy for best performance by an actress in a television series, comedy, or musical.
It was Tracy Ellis Ross's time.
Yeah,
I think, but I don't think there was necessarily a wrong pick there. I think if I'd been predicting, I really would have probably gone with Sarah Jessica Parker on the again. Biggest star coming back to TV, shiniest new thing, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I think probably my second guess would have been Issa Rae. So I don't think I would have predicted Tracy Ellis Ross, but it's just a great performance. And it's a great performance that somebody needed to give something to. And so by all means, whenever someone shines a light on something that's really good and deserving of recognition, I am right there for it. And Tracy Ellis Ross has always been great on Black-ish, and Black-ish is a great show. And so anything that gives it and her more recognition, thumbs up from me.
Okay. And let's see, best performance by an actress in a television series drama went to Claire Foy for The Crown. And it didn't go to...
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
Yeah, so
sigh.
But Claire Foy is you enjoy her in The Crown, right?
I do. I think she is. I think she is great in The Crown, and I think she is very much a HFPA style discovery performance. And I think that she's done work before, and people who enjoy themselves some British costume dramas, many of them know her, but. This is easily her biggest and highest profile role, and so it's a great performance as well. And I'm perfectly happy
yeah.
to see her get this recognition. If Evan Rachel Wood had gotten it, that would have been because the HFPA loved Westworld. It's a good performance to me. It's probably more of a supporting performance, but whatever.
Right.
Winona Ryder would have been about movie stars coming back to TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
Best limited series motion picture made for television. This was a shocker. Shocker, Dan. I was stunned. The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Well, but once we're going to talk about the acting awards in the miniseries film category, it certainly could have gone the other way. So no, obviously not a big surprise. But if you look at how those other awards go, who would have been shocked if there had been just an utterly crazy upset that just would have blown everyone's minds? But instead, no, O.J. won, and they barely said anything. I pretty much remember them getting played off.
They did.
Cuba Gooding Jr. wasn't drunk at that point, and then he was drunk when he came out to present a couple minutes later.
Yes, he was. Sit down! Or whatever he was doing. Okay. But, you know, you're talking about these acting categories in this category. The Globes really enjoyed The Night Manager, obviously.
They certainly did. I was rather surprised to see Tom Hiddleston, Hugh Laurie, and Olivia Colman all win, and each of them beating high-profile performances I would have guessed would have a better chance. I would have thought that Cordy B. Vance and perhaps Riz Ahmed or John Turturro would have been very competitive with Tom Hiddleston in the actor category there, and apparently they were not. I would have personally bet on John Lithgow winning for supporting actor, but Hugh Laurie got it, and the Globes have always liked Hugh Laurie, and you know everyone likes Tom Hiddleston, and Olivia Colman is fantastic. So none of those things are all that surprising. And in the supporting actors category, that would have been a great time for the Globes to honor Westworld with a Tandy Newton win. That would have made sense. Or if they had to sort of yield to their corporate overlords, they could have given it to one of the two This Is Us actresses, and that would have been strange, but you would have at least known what was up. But no, they apparently really liked The Night Manager.
Yeah, they did, clearly. So overall, in the TV categories, were you pleased with most of the winners?
I would say that I was more pleased than not, and I would also say that there was nothing that was clearly ridiculous about any of those awards that we talked about. Goliath is not a show that I loved especially, but Billy Bob Thornton's performance is the reason to watch the show, and he's always fun to watch. You know, the Crown in Atlanta, both very good new shows worth paying attention to, Tracy Ellis Ross. So, yeah, no, I was – and, of course, and we didn't mention it, Sarah Paulson did get her Golden Globe.
Yes.
So, no, I was mostly pleased, I think.
Yeah, okay. And Sarah Paulson, man, she's just the best. I just think she's awesome. Like, her speech was great. Everything about – I just love everything about Sarah Paulson.
No, she is in a moment, or having a moment, or continuing a moment, because she's been having it now for almost a year at this point. So she's just she's continuing, and she's not coasting. She's continuing to do great work. So yay for Sarah Paulson.
Yeah. Okay. And now, so what are some of the other highlights for you? We'll get to the Meryl Streep speech, but were there other things about the broadcast that you enjoyed?
I thought there were a couple of charming winners on the movie side as well. I liked the Ryan Gosling. I thought that was a very good, earnest speech that he gave. And, he's talked about how it belonged one-third to Damien Chazelle and one-third to Emma Stone, even though Damien Chazelle got two awards himself and Emma Stone got one herself. So, you know, that was good. There were more blunders than not on that side. Strange things like Brad Pitt introducing the Moonlight clip. I understand he produced the movie. I'm not immune to the fact also that he's a big star. But if you have a movie that's about the African American gay experience, and the movie is written and directed by an African American man and stars an African American cast, don't get a white movie star to present the clip. It's just not. It doesn't look good, and no one wanted to think about that. That bugged me a little, but
yeah,
you know, most of the winners seemed okay, I guess.
Okay, all right. And on the movie side, I wasn't surprised at all that all seven nominations that La La won all seven. Not surprised by it at all.
I would have honestly thought that something like Kenneth Lonergan winning for a screenplay, that would have seemed like a plausible break there to me, or Barry Jenkins winning for screenplay. Either one of them, because to me, I don't feel as if the screenplay is the strength necessarily of La La Land. So that would have been where I would have thought it was most vulnerable, probably. But apparently not. Apparently no vulnerabilities at all, at least not with the HFPA.
Yeah. Okay. And a big surprise with Aaron Taylor-Johnson winning for Nocturnal Animals.
There have been sort of rumors about the lobbying that Nocturnal Animals did to the HFPA, which also gave Tom Ford a couple nominations there that no one else has been giving him recognition for this season. So I don't know. Sure seemed like it was Mahershala Ali's to lose. So
yeah,
not.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Hang on. We got to take a break here. Dan, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about the Meryl Streep speech and the aftermath of that, obviously. So hang on a second. Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We come back, we'll talk more about the Golden Globes and, all that coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Tuesday, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in, one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So we're talking about the Golden Globes this morning. Dan Feinberg, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, who joins us every other Thursday, is making a special visit this morning just to talk about that. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
All right. First, before we get to the Meryl Streep speech, this whole hidden fences thing. What's your take on that?
I don't think that it's an example of hideous racism certainly not on Jenna Bush's part, and I believe she was sort of patient zero for it.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly an example of NBC employing people who aren't journalists to do the job of journalists, and the red carpet show was just pretty embarrassing top to bottom.
Yeah, it was.
And even with people like Al Roker, who I really do credit as being, if nothing else, a certain kind of journalist. So, but no, it was top to bottom embarrassing, that pre-show. And so I think that it's one of those things where somehow everybody started saying it, and then it somehow worked its way into the telecast. And I view it as just sort of clumsy. And
yeah,
if it weren't for sort of other bits of clumsiness around it, it wouldn't be disastrous. But, you know, enough clumsiness and people start thinking that you're not just negligent, that you're kind of embarrassing. And
yeah,
there was a little bit of that.
You know, it was funny. Last night on At Midnight, they showed a clip. They talked about the Golden Globes, obviously. And they showed the clip of her interviewing Pharrell. And when she says hidden fences, they just kind of, like, the look on Pharrell's face, as Chris Hardwick said, he doesn't look pissed. He just looks like you can actually hear him deflating. So what they did was they said the only thing that would make this better is if we put the Curb Your Enthusiasm music sting over it. So she says, I understand you're nominated for Hidden Fences, and all of a sudden you're dent, 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 and they just show Farrell's face. Hilarious. It was hilarious.
Don't employ amateurs because they have a name that you recognize.
Right.
There's no cause for that, and it's not a job that a trained SEAL can do. Or at least not do well. It's a job that requires people who know what they're doing, and I know a lot of people who do great work as red carpet journalists, and it's sad for me to see that kind of exposure going to someone who has no skills at all at it.
Okay. All right. We got to talk about the Meryl Streep speech. She won the DeMille Award and used that time to pretty much, without saying his name, never once said his name, went after Trump. The reaction to her speech, obviously, you know, the president-elect decided that he was going to tweet about Meryl Streep being an overrated actress. It's just ridiculous. So ridiculous. Anyway, some people thought it was inappropriate, you know, and that's always the case. Whenever anybody goes out of their way to make some sort of political statement at an award show, many, many people think it's inappropriate. How did you feel about it? What was your initial response after she had finished her speech?
Well, my initial response was that it was a great and powerful speech. And my other initial response was that, and you know, this is radio, so I can't say what it is that Meryl Streep has never given. But
yeah.
She's never given those things.
Yeah.
And she's never held back. And she's always said whatever was on her mind. And sometimes it's loopy and crazy. Sometimes it's questionably appropriate. Sometimes it is determined and passionate and dignified. And I felt like it was passionate and dignified. I mean, did people just want her to be thanking her agent and listing five co-stars that she worked with and telling a funny story about whatever? I mean, so she either could have been self-obsessed and reveled in this honorary award that she got from a group of faux journalists who just like a good cocktail party, or she could use her moment to call out the most powerful man in the world for being a bully. She didn't call him out for anything politically ideological.
Nope.
Nothing.
Nope.
And this was not a statement of liberal anything. This was a statement of don't let the people with power pick on people without power, period.
Yep.
And the
opening in the opening of the speech when she went and talked about the background and ethnicity of and where other the actors came from, I thought was beautiful and had nothing to do with anything other than the diversity that was in the room and what ultimately she was going to lead up to her point.
And the, of course, that was the stuff that was all ignored and has continued to be ignored by the people whining about, oh, the Hollywood elite once again forgetting about the normal people. And her point that she made and that she started with is the quote-unquote Hollywood elite is not anything. It's a group of people who come from all around the world of every imaginable background who found their way to a place because of maybe a skill, maybe a dream, maybe luck, whatever it is, and they all just happen to be together. It's not monolithic.
Yeah.
It's not easy to put in a corner or a bubble. It's as much everybody as anybody's anybody. And I didn't think it was perfect. She didn't need to pick on MMA.
No.
That didn't seem to have a purpose.
Right. It was, and of course, it was really. I mean, obviously, to close with a Carrie Fisher quote was killer.
It was terrific, and it was a perfect touch, and I was definitely misty by
yeah.
the end. The reaction and the blowback has been predictable, but to me, she didn't say anything negative about American values, about middle American values, about conservative values. Not bullying weak people is weaker people, not weak people. People who have less power than you.
Yeah.
Can be anybody if you're the president of the United States. That's not a liberal value, or it shouldn't be just a liberal value.
Right. Well, I thought her speech was pretty great. And obviously, you know, the water cooler moment of the show. No question about it.
And that's why you put Meryl Streep on a podium like that. That's because you think she's, you know, a wonderful actress, but you put her out there because you know she's going to do something like that, something wacky. And so she did what she was brought up there to do.
All right, Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Talk to you later, man.
All right, take care. There you go. Dan Feinberg, he's great. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can read his stuff at thehollywoodreporter.com and also follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he will join us again for our regular TV talk a week from Thursday. All right, we'll take a quick break here. We got the news coming up on 720 WGN.